Bienvenue sur le podcast natif de la French Tech Suisse romande, communauté internationale labellisée French Tech et active entre Genève et Lausanne en Suisse, dans lequel nous recevons des acteurs de l'innovation et de la technologie, qu'ils ou elles soient fondateurs de start-up ou de scale-up, mais aussi investisseurs ou dirigeants de corpo international. Le point commun de toutes et tous nos invités, un savant mélange de pragmatisme et d'ambition démesurée. Hi everyone, we are very happy today to do the first podcast episode of La French Tech Suisse Romande in English. Usually we do all those podcasts in French, but this is the first time we do it in English. And I'm very happy for this first English episode to welcome Alex Stockel, who is a founding partner at Wingman Ventures, and Edouard Tricani, who has joined Alex at Wingman Ventures and who is head of partnerships and venture partner. Hi Edouard, hi Alex, how are you guys?
Hi Raph, thank you so much. Et en français, je dois dire que c'est pour moi qu'on doit parler anglais. Comme ça, je suis désolé. sorry, guys. I think I'm the reason we have to speak English for the first time. And but happy to be on the show, Raph.
Excellent.
It's always hey, Raph. And same on my side. Super nice to reconnect to this. So thanks for organizing this, and super excited to talk about the fund and all of what we do.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Maybe I'd like to give a bit of an introduction myself. Obviously, you can correct me if I'm lacking details or going in the wrong direction. But Alex, you are the founding partner of Wingman Ventures that you have founded. I read in 2017, but you closed the fund in 2019, so last year. And you founded the fund with Pascal Matisse, who is a co-founder at Get Your Guide, and Lucas Veder, who is a co-founder at It.ch, who sold to Just It, actually. And from what I understand, your thesis at Wingman is to be the first investor in startups who have international ambitions, but from Switzerland. So you are backing Swiss entrepreneurs only, but who don't want to build Swiss stories only, but who want to build international stories, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Couldn't have put it better there. Raphael, so that's the whole thing. We're betting on the Swiss ecosystem. We're believing in Swiss founders. We're believing in the universities here and all of the innovation, all of the entrepreneurial drive that is there, that in our eyes just hasn't received the support it should, that hasn't received the investment it could. And so teaming up with the two entrepreneurs that you mentioned, Lucas and Pascal, that have built very successful companies here from Switzerland, teaming up with those two to start a fund that targets this this problem and helps the local entrepreneurs to have that very first sparring partner on their side that provides more than financing. That's really why we decided to start Wingman Ventures.
So you are actually a first-time team doing it's a first-time fund, and you closed a 76 million Swiss franc fund, right?
Yeah, even a bit more. We landed at roughly 80. We now round it up. It's 78.5, actually. And don't overemphasize the first team, first fund, please. You're scaring our LPs. They made a wrong decision there, maybe.
I think they have a kind of comfort looking at the team. So
I hope so, yeah.
And before that, you were the first employee at Gärtnerei, correct?
Yes. It's funny that you ducked that one out. I'm of the three of us, I'm the one with the shortest entrepreneurial track record. Gärtnerei is a small chain of healthy fast food restaurants, and I was once their COO at the time of going from one restaurant to a few. It was my entry ticket into the world of startups, but unfortunately, we never managed to reach what we had envisioned, and it got a little stuck in that stage.
We will come back to this experience a bit later in the episode. And Edouard, now you are head of partnerships and a venture partner at Wingman. But before that, you've spent a few years at Mass Challenge, and in your last assignment, you were program director. And you were based in Lausanne.
Yeah, precisely. And this is the channel through which we actually met the two of us. So I spent a few years there, started kind of at the bottom, kind of circumstantial the way I landed up and landed there. But yeah, so I spent a few years, got to be program director, and was responsible to on the startup side to make sure that they got value to the acceleration program that we run. It's one of the big accelerators in Switzerland. We support around 80 startups on a yearly basis. And I must say, it's it was one of the first steps on my side with the startup ecosystem in Switzerland, but I think the perfect first touch point to kind of build upon and now work on the VC side.
We'll come back to this point as well a bit later in the episode. But before that, both of you, I'd like you to do a little exercise. Would you be able to describe yourself besides your job? So please don't talk about your job, what you do as a professional. But would you be able to describe yourself, maybe talking about some passion, some things you like a lot in your free time, in your spare time? Maybe Alex, you can start. And I read that obviously, maybe that's part of your journey at Gartner Eye, but you are fond of gastronomy. Is it something that defines you?
it certainly does. And too bad. I thought now that I get to, you know, introduce Edouard from a non working point of view. That would have certainly been more fun for the audience.
That would have been fun.
But no, you definitely caught a good point there. I with Gartner Eye, I entered the gastronomy world, and I'm still in there with one foot. One of my former employees, half Peruvian, half Swiss of background, decided to go and bring this wonderful Peruvian cuisine to the Swiss, and I joined her as a co-founder today, just in the board of the company, but also got a little bit of an itch in the world of wine and winemaking, and so I did a sommelier degree, and I'm now responsible for the wine menu at that restaurant. And actually, my colleagues make quite a lot of fun of me for being such a wine nerd. But if I'm not working in VC or with founders here in Switzerland, then you probably find me reading somewhere a wine book or tasting some great wines.
What is a recent wine that you have discovered and that you wish you would have tasted before?
Oh, there's endless amount, but something that I right now looking at a lot is different origins of Pinot Noir. I think it's actually in the French-speaking part of Switzerland, this is the most important red grape variety. And I have tastings with a bunch of other wine nerds, and our next tasting is Californian red wine. And I really don't like American red wine. It's always so heavy and so much oak and so so sweet. It's sweet, not fresh, and I don't like it. And so I thought, oh, what am I going to bring to that tasting evening? I didn't pick the topic. Huh? One of the others did. And then I realized that there is an appellation in California called Russian River Valley, and they are very well known for making good Pinot Noir. And Pinot Noir is quite fresh. It's quite elegant. That is almost comparable, they say, to the Burgundy wines. And so now I've picked one of those, and I must admit I was quite impressed. And so this is one of the little observations I've made there in the past weeks.
And I think there is a link between you in terms of gastronomy, because Edouard, I read that you like picking up mushrooms in the forest.
Yeah, so that's that. It's funny that you picked up that. Good, you did really good.
I did
research.
My work.
Yes, totally. So yeah. So I'm into this. I'm also discovering kind of new passions that you could consider being kind of byproduct of this. One being espresso. So now I'm about to purchase some kind of old school Italian espresso machine just to pull some shots and to try different varieties of coffees. But in general, I would say I'm a little bit on the geek side. So if I'm not working, you would still see me on the computer playing chess online or watching YouTube videos and total geeky leisure type of stuff. I used to be on the sports side quite heavy, but Alex will actually concur with me in saying that as of late, it has been decreasing a bit. We have a weekly team run every Monday. We go for 5 to 10 kilometers, and I tend to be the one, the last one part of the bunch of the runners. So the cardio is not there any longer.
You said this, Edouard. I didn't mention it. If we afterwards talk about this, it wasn't me that brought it up.
Totally. But I used to have a decent shape actually on the sports side. So back in the days, I would do taekwondo. I was black belt, and I still am on paper, and also a very decent tennis player. But yeah, so I guess that's a bit of me. Happy to elaborate if you are more curious, but nothing else comes to mind now.
It's fun that you are going for a run each Monday. Is it something that you do with founders before you invest in those companies? Because a lot of investors and founders, before they team up, they go for a walk in the park. Do you go for a run in the park?
Yeah, that's a good one. We never thought about that. No, we haven't yet. I mean, unfortunately, with COVID times right now, we have very little personal interactions with founders before we invest. Is one of the challenges, because we like spending time. Usually we focus a lot with the founders on interaction around their company, trying to see if we can work well together on that. But I think we should do that. Yeah, we've done it in the past with the team. So, you know, everyone that joined Wingman over the past years, we've gone and done some sports with, you know, going to a climbing hall or playing a round of tennis, just to, you know, to get to know each other in a more relaxed environment. But it's a good idea, Ralph.
Excellent. Thank you so much for this introduction. Maybe now talking a bit about your experience, I'd like to know, Alex, what you've learned by being the first employee at Gärtnerei. You mentioned before that it was an experience that did not meet the expectation of the team in terms of growth, in terms of success. Apparently, this is what you said, but it's not exactly what I want to learn from you. But I'd like to know, by being the first employee, what have you observed, and what have been your key lessons learned from this experience as a first employee?
Sure, very happy to. But maybe as a disclaimer, within our team, I'm certainly the guy with the least entrepreneurial experience, and I embrace that in the sense as that I'm at the same time the guy that has spent most time in venture capital. And within our team, if when we work with founders, I tend to focus mostly on preparing them for fundraisers, on, you know, preparing them on the interaction with future investors, developing with them the story for how they're going to be able to continue raising funds in order to implement their vision. So I appreciate the interest in the Gärtnerei spell, and happy to now in a moment answer the question. But it's important for me that I don't want to position this as, look, I have a lot of startup experience, because I don't. I was there for a year. It was interesting. I was, like you said, first employee. And that's not the first employee of the company, but the first one in what we then called the headquarters. So this was initially a small soup and salad restaurant. And the owner of that, he realized that there's somewhat a sense of zeitgeist that healthy fast food could be something much, much bigger than a single restaurant. And so he would go out and raise some money, what we now would call a seed round. It was just a bit more than $1 million. And he would hire two people that would go and run the company. And that was me and the CEO, Roger, at the time. And the two of us, we were put in charge to, you know, go and scale this from one restaurant into a chain of restaurants. Then with 3-4 locations up and running, go and raise another financing round. And then, you know, keep growing that until it eventually becomes what we always called the green McDonald's. And it was a wonderful role, because I just came from the consulting world, where you have zero responsibility, but you have to always make yourself look very solid and very reliable. And you have to, you know, put up a good face and seem like you have everything under control for the client that you're working on. Suddenly you sit there and you realize that it doesn't matter what appearances you make, you just go and have to deliver. And I think we opened 4 restaurants within half a year. I hired roughly 70 people. It was amazing. It was one of the biggest learning curves I had. And I realized my strength, but also my weaknesses. And I realized, you know, how in the startup world, you can, with every decision, you can make or break the company, because you have endless opportunities, but very limited resources. And so compared to a corporate, every day, every decision matters. And that kind of pressure also creates an enthusiasm and a positive adrenaline, and I love that. I love that word.
Okay, yeah, that's very clear. And Edouard, before we didn't talk about what you are doing as well at Superfounder. Maybe you can say a word about it. But I want to understand what kind of problems you have identified that has led you to build Superfounder. And before that, maybe you can just explain what is Superfounder, because it's something that is quite unique. But I want to understand the rationale for funding Superfounder.
Okay, so it's a thank you for the question, Raphael. It's a two-step process. There is Superfounder the way it was built, and there is Superfounder tomorrow. It's being repositioned slightly over the next months. The way it was initially built came from a pain point where we realized that the mentorship within the different startup support programs in Switzerland was always given by people who are from the corporate world or without operational experience in a startup. And I talk from experience. I myself, as you know, and you mentioned earlier, I spent a few years at Mass Challenge, the startup accelerator. But I think it's an observation that you can make for every, pretty much most, if not every initiative out there. And the idea of Superfounder was to pull together an experienced population of founders and operators who have actually built a startup and are therefore able to mentor other startups and young founders in a way, in a different way, because they've been doing it themselves. And so that was the whole rationale. And actually, this rationale resonated very well with the founders who joined the community, because upon myself reaching out to them, essentially the feedback from them was that it was spot on. They had felt this pain, and this is why kind of the community was built. So this was Superfounder as it is now, and as it was when it was initially built. And now we are considering the fact of repositioning it as a broader community where the founders, the experienced founders, can actually mingle, meet, do activities together, do lunches together. So that essentially the social component will be increasing over time and over the course of the year.
Okay, very clear. You are both talking about the difficulties of building and enduring a company. I'd like to learn from you and to know from you what you think the most foundational step is to build and enduring a company. What do you think is the most critical thing that any founder has to achieve to build a long-lasting company? Is there something that is very specific? If you were to pick up one aspect of building a company which is the most critical, what would it be? Maybe Edouard, you'd like to continue.
So, okay, intangibles are super important, and actually I come from the school of thought where I believe that founders have it or don't have it. You can they have a certain potential, a certain ceiling, and you can, as a VC or as a mentor, help them to get to that ceiling, but certain founders simply don't have it. And then we can debate about those intangibles. It's at least for me, it's difficult to actually express exactly what it is, but it's something that you can feel 5 minutes within a call, an initial call. So the school of thought I come from is very cynical. I think that many founders actually will not get there because they don't have these intangibles. Whereas others have them, and we as VC or mentors can try to help them get there faster and grow with the cycle alongside the cycle of the company.
Is an intangible like the founder mission fit? Will it be a kind of an intangible which is the most critical for you?
To me, there is a sense of intelligence, hard execution, indeed, you have. So when you say founder mission fit, probably a byproduct would be the fact of being mission driven and passionate about what they do. And clearly, this is part of the what is needed. But yeah, there is, for me, there is an element, a clear element of intelligence, a clear element of sense of execution, and probably correlated to that, there is passion about the pain point being solved.
Alex, just before you mentioned that you have hired 70 people a while at Gartner, even though you don't want to highlight too much this experience because it's just part of your career. But you said that through this experience, you understood that things could go wrong very quickly at any company at a startup phase. What is to you this most critical foundational step that a founder has to walk to build this this enduring company I was just talking about before, and that Edouard very well explained with the intangible side of things.
Yeah, I'm generally speaking, I'm very much with Edouard there. I think it's essential that the founders are doing this for the right reasons, and with that I mean with a conviction that what they are doing is relevant, is needed, and that it has a right of existence. And that is not always the case. There's sometimes people that do it because they want to quickly earn money. There's sometimes people that do it for the lack of alternatives. There's sometimes people that just heard about it being fun to do a startup. And that's all of that is legitimate. This is just not what is going to drive. I think the key word in what you asked earlier is a sustainably successful company. And I think for that sustainability, you really need that drive. And the reason you need that is for the other point that Edouard mentioned, is the readiness to work hard, to execute, to take a few hits, to stand up again. And I think that these are the key elements that you need, but also that you don't get lost in some of the strange industry incentivizations or dynamics. So especially in venture, very quickly one measures the success of a company with two KPIs that in my opinion just don't make sense at all. One of them being the amount of funding received, and the other one is the amount of people working at the company, because both of them are actually signs of inefficiency, if you will. So, you need a lot of money if you burn a lot of money. You need a lot of people if it's very complex what you do. And I think the entrepreneurial heart should always long for the opposite of that, for something capital efficient, for something that is manageable and doesn't too quickly, get to a scale where it's difficult to stay efficient. And so I think that is important too. I've worked with founders that, they started to love the stage. They started to love the news articles about yet another financing round with that much money. And that is a big risk that you get into fairly quickly in the VC world, where it's very glamorous to raise from big funds. And I think this is something that is really essential, is that you help the people to keep their eyes on the prize, and the prize is to build a company that can actually work by itself, something that can, like you said, and I think you put that very well, Raf, something that can be sustainably successful.
So would the best accomplishment for an entrepreneur that you would applaud, acclaim, would be to build a long-lasting company that does not so much rely on external funding and does not so much rely on the size of the company. It's not the biggest, the better. It's not the most funded, the better. But it's maybe the most profitable. Or what is the accomplishment that you would claim?
Yeah, it's a difficult one because, I mean, I wouldn't. I definitely wouldn't, because what we want is we want to change the attitude of Swiss founders. We want to help them believe that it's possible to build internationally leading companies from here. And the consequence of being an international leading company is that you will be a big company, and a big company has a lot of employees. In order to grow quickly to a lot of employees, you need a lot of funding. So I don't want to put here now a negative connotation to funding or employees, but I want to put a negative connotation to this being the most
the finality aspirable, of the accomplishment.
The most aspirable KPI. Mm-hmm. So I think for someone that really wants to build a business, the number one KPI will be the number of customers, will be the number of people or businesses that you and your solution have a positive impact on, mm-hmm. will be the strength of your product, will be maybe the global presence of your solution. And then the employees are a consequence of that, and the funding is the enabler of that. But it isn't the very first thing. Isn't, we're startup XY and we've raised 20 million. And I think this is just something that you need to reflect on, because you can very quickly become addicted to that type of dynamic within the European tech community, where it's just the coolest thing in the world is to have a unicorn, and the unicorn is a valuation. But is the valuation the coolest thing, or is it the coolest thing that you're actually building a business that is good enough for someone to give it money at that valuation?
Very clear. Maybe if you want to talk about Switzerland a bit more in particular, could you maybe give us your thought about what Switzerland has given to tech and innovation so far, so up to now 2021? Maybe you can give us a few salient stories. I mean, the stories of tech and innovation in Switzerland that you would keep in mind, and that has brought Switzerland to its current state of tech and innovation. Maybe a few stories that are the most salient. Maybe Edouard, you want to answer it?
So I can at least partly answer on the French speaking side. And there I have to be cautious, because actually part of the Swiss market and even the Swiss French market, I don't know that well. And that part is a very important market in Switzerland. It is biotech and medtech. And clearly some of the biggest successes of our country come actually from the biotech side, where many companies were taken public and acquired for at the multi-billion dollar level. So this I need to put aside, because this is not an area that I am so cognizant of. I can talk a bit about tech and deep tech or hard tech, or however you call it, coming from the labs out of EPFL and ETH. And there, if I look specifically at the French parts, many of the names that I like and that I look at, you may know and you certainly know, such as Nextink or Sophia Genetics. We have a couple of so-called unicorns in the region, Nextink being the latest of the pack. MindMaze is one of them. But you know, the funny part is you also have those success stories that are a bit in the underground, that are not on the mainstream. And when I think about very, very large and resilient SaaS companies in the French-speaking part, I also think about CloudBees, for instance, who was funded by Lightspeed Partners in the Valley. Mm-hmm. Has hundreds of employees and is just operating the headquarters out of Neuchâtel. And pretty much no one is talking about them. And they are literally one of the biggest SaaS successes out of the region. We also have someone we are close to at Wingman. We are related to a company named talent.com. It's a marketplace whom we are close to at Wingman. And this is also a company who operates in the same space than indeed.com, where they do aggregation of different of hundreds of job markets around listings around the world. And here we're also talking about a very big company on the revenue side, lots of successes based in Switzerland and Canada. It's again one of those startups that we don't necessarily hear of immediately when you think about the French speaking part. To wrap up, I would say one of the startups that I've been following not just as of late but for the past years, and that I'm relatively excited about, is Condu. I think they announced a big rounds, 90 million rounds. Precisely. And Bessemer also backed them for I think at least one, and potentially
this is the third time I think they're backing.
Exactly. So it's a repeat backing from Bessemer. And so that just means, that just says a lot about what comes out of EPFL. I think there are deep techs that have very long cycles. Some of the deep techs have very long cycles, can be 10 to 15 years, but those can be groundbreaking technologies, and Condu is one of them.
Excellent. And Alex, talking about the Swiss German part of the country, what would be the one or two stories that has brought Switzerland to its current state of tech?
I think it's always a bit unfair to point it on only a few, but obviously I understand we have limited amount of time in the conversation. Now, I think I would split it down into two groups. I think one are the local champions that we shouldn't underestimate, right? So with Wingman, we very much focus on those type of founders that want to build international companies from here. It's because in the majority of industries, Switzerland alone is too small of a market, but there's really a whole bunch of exceptions. And if you look at, you know, what people like Brack or Digitech have achieved, where they outperform international competitors that are massive, like companies like Amazon. You know, they wouldn't stand a chance in the Swiss market because of the good work that founders like the ones of Digitech have done. And I think that is equally important for the confidence of the ecosystem, is to see that, you know, you can build big businesses here, and it's not only the global players, the US players that are the ones that stand a chance. But then on the other side, I'm fully with Edouard, and it's the same here in the German speaking part. There's a lot of underdog players that probably don't receive the attention they deserve. So, for example, there's here a company called Scandit in Zurich that is enterprise software solution in the logistics field. And I think those guys, they are really global household names as their customers, and they generate millions and millions in revenue. They have very strong investors that came and backed them. And unfortunately, you know, what means, it's a bit of a dilemma, I think. Those guys, they work so hard. They don't have so much time to, you know, jump around on award show stages in Switzerland. And as a result of that, they just get a lot less attention. But I think those are the kind of companies we should look up to, because they walk more than they talk, and they really show that you don't have to be in the valley, you don't have to be in London to build big B2B software companies. You can do it also here from Switzerland. And I think that's an important message to everyone out there that is thinking about starting a company.
And I think what is very interesting today is to have those two perspectives that you have. So Alex from the Swiss-German part and Edouard from the French-speaking part of Switzerland, because there are two dynamics. But it's also interesting to understand today if those two dynamics are kind of converging and in what direction they are going. And this is something that I'm going to ask quite often today, your two perspectives on those two, I would say, markets. And I want to talk now a bit about your view about Switzerland in the next very difficult, obviously, 5 to 10 years. Where do you see tech in Switzerland go? Do you think that today there are a few things happening that are definitely changing the landscape in Switzerland? Do you think that biotech will still prevail as a sector attracting funding? Do you see other sectors that are emerging that would maybe take the lead in terms of funding? Obviously, funding is not the ultimate KPI to achieve for a founder. This is exactly what you said before, but it's something that is that give clues about potential success. So a lot of questions today also would relate around funding. So my question is, where do you think Switzerland will go in the next few years, and do you see things already changing today that would lead to this state of tech in the next 5 to 10 years? I like to ask long questions. I think it was a 2-minute question.
No, it's a great question, Raf, and I definitely do see a lot of change happening already now. And yeah, it's of course always difficult to make predictions for a longer time frame, 5 to 10 years, but something
this
inside
is the time
me,
frame of a VC you are investing for.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
5 to 10
exactly. That's the challenge we're faced with every day. And my gut feeling somehow tells me that we're going to be in a similar situation as the Israeli startup ecosystem is nowadays. So there will be lots more founders, a lot more programs to support founders, really a whole bunch of very, very good VCs, and a much stronger connection to the international investor community. So it will not be the exception anymore that, you know, Bessemer invests in Candu. We will not celebrate that anymore as a, oh yeah, finally. It will be the day-to-day. And the reason I'm convinced about that is, on one side, because there's just intellectually, there's this misbalance of having, you know, ETH, EPFL, two of the, you know, 10 best technical universities in the world, computer science ranking among Stanford and MIT. And we have all of that. We have a country that's politically, economically stable. We have great places to live here, but somehow we're not relevant as a startup or tech hub. That is a mismatch, and that will have to change. So, you know, either the universities will turn really bad and nothing will happen, or we have the startup ecosystem just, you know, slowly following following in the path, and I rather believe in the second. And then the second thing is we see today this change happening. So, you know, just in this call right now, you have Edouard who started Superfounder, you have myself who started Swiss VC, another initiative similar to Superfounder, bringing together investment professionals. And both of these initiatives, they've seen massive growth in the last 1.5, 2 years. We've seen more and more people that are interested in dedicating more time, more energy into helping the startup ecosystem. We have more funds that are being launched. We have more spin-offs coming out of the universities. I think all of it is set on growth. And so I'm really optimistic for where we're gonna stand in a few years.
Do you have a take maybe for the French part of Switzerland, Edouard? Where do you see this part of the country go in terms of expertise and of success? We see a lot of companies on the drone side of thing, in particular, but we also see SaaS companies. Do you think that there is a particular color for the French-speaking part of Switzerland that will emerge and will grow and will help build long-lasting companies?
So I'll be honest with you, Raphael, I don't have a precise take there. I think it's difficult to, yes, there is obviously a kind of a mini cluster around drone, but I don't see a bigger cluster that I can claim is going to take over or be very prominent in the next years, specifically in the French speaking part. What I see now that I look at the whole Swiss market, so to speak, or the whole Swiss supply side of startups on a constant basis, what I see that is promising is that some founding teams are now spinning out of established startups. So if you think startups of 50 to 200 employees, you start seeing this pattern where some key employees are kind of quitting the startup to launch their own thing. And I think this is amazing. This is something that only arrives when you have this critical mass of big scale-ups and experience within the employee team. So we start seeing that, and I think it's an amazing prospect. But we, as so far, I must say, we only see that in the Swiss German speaking part of Switzerland. I have yet to see that in the Swiss French speaking part of Switzerland. Even though we have the next things of the world who have 500 plus employees, I have not yet seen founding teams spin out. I hope it will happen in the future. So this, I think, is promising on the Swiss German side. And the other thing that I see, and that is equally strong on both sides of, I was going to say both sides of the river. It's not really a river that separates the German and the French speaking part, but the equal strength of the two regions to me is the quality of the deep techs and art techs who spin out from the labs at ETH and EPFL. It's quite amazing the type of disruptive technologies that you see that are not your traditional SaaS, enterprise SaaS, that have longer cycles to go to market, but that are groundbreaking. And there, I must say, what comes out of EPFL can be very much diverse, but it is equally strong as what you see spinning out from ETH.
Okay, that's very clear. You were mentioning the fact that few employees from successful companies are spinning out and either starting new companies or also becoming business angels. And it's kind of an indication of an ecosystem that is reaching a new level of maturity. And it adds also to the supply of funding that entrepreneurs, a primo entrepreneur can tap into. My question is, what is the level of funding you see in Switzerland? Is there enough funding, in particular at seed stage, because this is what is of your interest? There is a specific system in Switzerland that is much different from that prevailing in France, for instance, where in Switzerland you have a pension funds that are investing retirement plans and money into various asset classes, but venture capital is still very little as an allocation in those pension funds. So there is a lot of untapped opportunity that a pension fund could help address. But my broader question is about the level of funding. Do you see enough kinds of funding supplies in Switzerland, and in particular with this potential arrival of founders paying back to the ecosystem? And I think Lucas and Pascal are great example of this. They have been successfully co-founding companies and they are paying back, quote unquote, through Wingman Ventures. So where do you see the stage of seed funding in Switzerland?
I think it's still far too little. Huh? I mean, one of the clear signs for me was that when we launched, every founder team that we've spoken to so far has told us, guys, you are what we've been looking for, what we've been waiting for. And while this is very nice and a clear confirmation of our way of working with founders and of our positioning, it just comes to show that something that in London is normal, which is, you know, a founder-led early stage fund that writes small tickets, is very much you know, focused on being efficient for the founder, on being pragmatic, having founder-friendly terms, and then supporting beyond the money. This is normal in London. This is normal in the Silicon Valley. That here, this is unique still. And so that comes to show that we're still at the start of that. I hope that in a few years, we're not unique. I hope that then we're unique for different reasons, maybe because, you know, we've been doing this for many years. We've worked with some of the most successful founder teams and we have a clear track record. And then that's why founders choose to work with us. But for the time being, they choose to work with us because we're the only real option. The rest are, you know, a bit more, let's say, old school style investors, are family offices, that it's certainly nice that they invest in startups, but I just would argue that maybe they're not the best initial investor in a startup. You really want someone that is fully dedicated to supporting the entrepreneurs and so on. And I mean, the angle of, let's say, business angels being competing with players like us, I actually don't buy into that because we do co-invest with business angels. We have the majority of successful Swiss entrepreneurs as investors in our fund. And they just look at us as another way of keeping involved in the ecosystem. And, you know, there's other players like SickTick that we very happily work together with, co-invest with. We very much appreciate their existence because it's just so helpful. You know, if founders raise a first round, they have someone like us as a lead investor, and then we add 2-3 business angels to it that have very specific expertise, maybe sector expertise or a particular network that is helpful to the founders. And then that complements very well and then just generates the kind of financing rounds that really bring the companies forward that are helpful to the entrepreneurs. So I think, to answer in short, we're only at the start of it. I think there's a lot more required, but it's on its way. And I think that really funds and business angels, they just complement each other perfectly.
Excellent. Would you like to add something, Edouard, on what Alex just said?
Yeah, so I think we are arriving at a tipping point now where the supply of financing will probably meet the demand of the startups. I was reading the latest startup ticker report. They have this annual VC report where they talk about different statistics. Very interesting and very easy to digest. And I think I read it like a month or two ago, and they were saying that there were, I think, 20 VCs that were thinking about raising funds, a new fund in the current year, and around 13 VCs closed the fund within the past 2 years, something like this. So I think we are at a tipping point, and in the next, let's say, 2 to 3 years, the supply side will meet the demand side. And even, I wonder, to be honest, I wonder if the equation will not be reversed, where actually there will be kind of too much capital for too few excellent startups at the top of the distribution.
So valuation popping up.
Potentially. Because, you know, the thing is, a lot of startups now, again, I'm a bit cynical, but I think a lot of startups that shouldn't be financed are financed. Yeah. As of late, that's what I see. And I wonder if with those new funds that are going to come on the market, actually there will be kind of overflow of capital. I don't know exactly, but it's a kind of a feeling that I have looking at those stats and the evolution of the market as of late. And but it wasn't like that in 2015 to 2017. It's a completely new trend as far as I'm concerned.
In a moment, we will try to understand how you work with entrepreneurs, and before that, how you identify entrepreneurs you want to back. But maybe one other question related to the state of tech in Switzerland, and just before you mentioned the Candubus case, which is a great example of a success story that is successful in attracting international capital and in particular US capital, but I can also think about Optimize Cloud, which has been funded by A16Z. I think it was end of last year. The A16Z led a $3 million round in Optimize Cloud. So those are two great examples of Swiss startups managing to attract capital on an international scene. But what do you think it gives to the market and the ecosystem as a signal? Is there something specific, given the Swiss mindset that to me is always very not silent, but willing not to do too much fuss about what the country does? Is there a signal that Switzerland may be a bit too attractive for Swiss entrepreneurs that don't like sometimes so much to do the headlines? Is that an old paradigm I'm referring to, or is it changing?
Yeah,
is it still something
so.
Prevailing?
I think so. I have on one side, I have a bit of an issue with two things. I'll just put it out there. I have an issue with two things. One, I don't think it's fair to always refer to the Swiss culture being a blocking stone, mm-hmm. in the sense of Swiss people are risk averse, Swiss people. They're comfortable with high salary levels, and Switzerland is expensive to build a company, and Swiss people are not good enough at sales. And I disagree, because Switzerland has an amazing history of building companies, of having companies that are internationally successful in the financial sector, in the tech sector, in the international organization sector. Switzerland is a country that tries to be discreet, that tries to be neutral, that tries to stay a bit in the background, but it's not a country that shies away from being relevant, from holding important positions, and I think we make ourselves smaller here. And I say that as an expat, right? I live here since 10 years, but I'm not Swiss, and I just think it's a mistake, because it's a negative storyline that we keep reinforcing by always mm-hmm. speaking about it again. And Swiss founders can sell, Swiss founders can build international companies, and Switzerland is not too expensive. This is super important. We have teams like Get Your Guide that move their entire engineering team back to Zurich because, quote unquote, the founder said that it is more expensive to have good engineers in Berlin than in Zurich. And then we said, how is this possible? Salaries are higher. And he says, yes, salaries are higher here, but employee loyalty is also higher here, and output is also higher here, and we just find the better talent in some for the same cost. And so I think we need to be very cautious with that. And I'm sorry for the little rant here, but I'm quite emotional about negative storytelling that reinforces itself, and where basically everyone is kept being told that it's not possible. And so to go back to what you initially said, Raphael, yes, it's good that there's international investors investing in Swiss startups. And yes, it's an important sign, because that shows that we can compete out there. That, someone like Andreessen Horowitz, they pick a Swiss startup over another one, over a whole bunch of US startups, by backing someone like Optimize.
Okay, very clear. I'd like to understand how you select startups, and maybe you can drive us a bit through the selection process, how you identify founders you'd like to engage a discussion with, what are the steps required for a founder to go through the process, and what are your maybe critical questions, the one or two questions that you like repeating and asking founders. Can you maybe help us understand how you select companies that you are investing in? And maybe you can take an example, Edouard. You could highlight an example of an investment that Wingman has made in the French-speaking part of Switzerland. So two sides on the question: how you select, and an example.
To be very transparent, since I joined the team on a full-time basis, I actually I barely did one full cycle of investment. I think I did just barely one. And so I think Alex, having been doing this for 4 years, for super long time at both Creator Ventures and Wingman, I think is the best place to talk about the process, the internal process.
Sure. Happy to. And I'm sure you could have explained it just as well, Edouard, because you've been involved with so many companies that we invested in also. Before joining us full time beginning of the year, but I appreciate the thought. What we basically do is, I mean, we have a fund that invests only in Switzerland, only in tech, and only at pre-seed stage. That's as narrow as it gets. Then we keep open what kind of tech people are working on. We really want to be agnostic here. We don't focus on certain technologies or industries. We just want to go with what Switzerland is producing, in terms of people with bright ideas. And within that, it's our very mission to find the teams that do it for the right reasons, that are 100% convinced that they're going to be able to really change the space that they're operating in, that they're sitting on an idea, on a technological innovation that makes a real difference. That is gonna make a lasting difference, and that has the ability to actually play an international role. So now this sounds so cheesy, and it is maybe a bit, but that's really the main criterion we have: is are these the right people to go and do what they're looking out to do, and do they do it for the right reasons? And if there we can tick all boxes, then of course, like any other VC, you know, we have the obligation to go and look at. Does this all look sound? Is this setup legally correct, financially correct? Does it make sense to raise that amount of money? Is this an attractive market? Is the product really as good? How does this compare to other solutions that are out there, existing ones, maybe other startups globally? So we do our bit of research there, but we try to keep that very light because we've all worked with investors in our own startups, and we really are aware of the burden that can place on a founder and distraction from their actual core business. And so we try to, you know, really leave the founders to it as much as we can and focus on doing these homeworks by ourselves. And the process is fairly simple. We have a few individual touch points with the founder team, getting to know them, understanding where they stand. Then we have a few currently virtual meetings where we have a bit of a workshop style, a discussion about how we could together bring the company forward, what value we could add. Then we do our own due diligence, and then we have a final workshop session where we really all together take a decision. And that doesn't mean only us, but really also the founders, if Wingman is the right partner for the stage that they're in, for the additional support that they look for. And then hopefully we invest. And we've done this now. I think we're closing in the next 2 weeks. We're closing two investments that are going to be number 9 and 10 of the fund, and that means there's another 20 to come, and so we're really thrilled to keep doing that.
I know, Alex, that time is up and we need to wrap up now, but maybe just before we wrap up, can you maybe just give us an example of a recent investment that you made and what has brought your attention to this particular investment case?
So I think the most recent publicly disclosed investment that we've made is Depoly, a Sion-based company. It's in the chemical space. It's a company that has developed a new technology for the depolymerization of PET plastics. So that means, in very simple language, they recycle PET plastics better than they're currently recycled. And they do this not only better, but also more cost efficient and more sustainable. It's quite a cool topic, I find. It's quite an exotic one for a lot of VCs, but we don't mind doing things that are a bit out of the ballpark of others. And here we came across the team because they've just, they have this wonderful ability of very sympathetically displaying what they're working on. It's a very high-tech topic that is difficult to bring across, but yet they made it tangible. And I think they created quite some attention for the topic here in Switzerland. And we love that because that shows that these people, they're not only interested in technology, but also the impact they can have with the technology. Mm-hmm. And this then paired with the very unique tech that they're working on, and quite a lot of attention of international companies that would like to use their solution, really led us to believe that this is going going to be one of the big success stories we're going to have in the next years here from Switzerland.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Alex, for this great example. Time is up. We need to come to the conclusion. I'm very happy that I had the chance and the opportunity to talk with you guys and get your two perspectives on the Swiss tech ecosystem. One last question, maybe. I'd like to know if there is a resource note that you recently discovered, but is there a resource that you keep on reading, listening to? Is there something that is always in your mind and you like to come back to?
So two things that I came across recently, or actually one of them for quite a while I've been following, but one of them is hashtag OpenLP, LP standing for Limited Partner, which is the people that back venture funds. It's mainly for VCs to exchange experiences, but it's a very nice newsletter that certainly also gives founders a better understanding of the industry that finances them. And the second one is vcguide.co. It's for the time being, unfortunately, very US centered, but I just had a call with them and they're going to add Wingman to the bunch there. And it's basically a platform where founders can rate VCs anonymously. And I think that's quite a cool thing. And those are the kind of things that we really need to get going here in Switzerland too.
Excellent. And Edouard, is there a resource that you like coming back to? I know that you listen a lot to the 20 VC podcast, right?
So I do listen to the 20 minute podcast VC and to Jason Calacanis from time to time. I would say as part of my routine, I keep it very simple. I generally read angel.co/today. I just look at the curation that AngelList is doing there. I like it. Very simple to digest. You see kind of the hottest topics every day. And I also read the daily Sifted newsletter just to know what's going on in Europe, not to be too lost in regards to the big news. And then, so I would say this is the catch up that I do every morning to just make sure I'm at least aware of the traditional stuff that you should know in the US and Europe. And then when it pertains to Switzerland, there I look at a lot of stuff because it's part of the job of what we do. We want to be cognizant of what's going on. So I have a bunch of sources that I make sure to track, but it's not necessarily for fun. It's a mix of intellectual curiosity, but also part of the work.
Okay, excellent. We will share in the show notes your links. Okay, excellent. That was very cool to have you on the show, Edouard and Alex. I had a great time discussing with you about what it takes for Switzerland to be even more prominent on the global tech scene. And I think you gave very interesting insights to us. So again, thank you very much. And I guess if we want to contact you, we can find your contact details on your website, wingman.ch.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Raphael. It was a pleasure. And thanks for doing this. It's, I think, a great medium for the ecosystem. It was really nice being part of the show.
Thank you again, Alex and Edouard.
Bye-bye. Totally. Thank you, Raphael. Merci beaucoup.
Salut.
À bientôt. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ciao.